Welcome to the Nation. An eventful weekend of college football. No truth, anybody here at the Texas Roadhouse dodging a full bottle of water.
So you bring it up and get everybody all started.
Austin Price, Chris Lowe. I tell you what, one of those games where Tennessee played their guts out
and
really with so many guys injured to even be in that football game and just to have it marred by an embarrassing ending. Not all fans. I think everybody's going to paint with a broad brush of what happened there at the end of the game. It's just like my dad used to say, it only takes a few to screw it up for everybody. And I want to say this, too. There are going to be a lot of people coming down on the Tennessee students. And, yes, there are a lot of bottles and vape pipes and half-eaten apples and screws and glass containers thrown on the field.
Don't forget the French's mustard.
The mustard bottle. But they aren't all coming from students. I was standing on the 20-yard line. I was sitting there watching. I saw a lot of people who are a lot older than students throwing stuff from the upper deck and the lower deck. And that's to me, that's the crime of what happened last night. Is Tennessee really in a great – I haven't been to a lot of Tennessee games over the last 4 or 5 years. I had a chance to go around the campus yesterday. That's the best environment, the best vibe for a football game that I've seen on campus in a long time. The crowd was great. And then it's all, just basically like what Danny White said in his statement last night. For 59 minutes, it doesn't get much better as far as the college football environment and atmosphere. And a bunch of knuckleheads, not all 100,000, but a bunch of knuckleheads screwed up for everybody for throwing things. And remember this, and Lane Kiffin said this last night when I talked to him after the game, the players got helmets on. So they're probably, but you got cheerleaders, you got the Tennessee band who are getting thrown stuff on, you got kids from administrators at Ole Miss are on the sidelines.
Well, you got people the kids that aren't playing that aren't
right.
in
you got guys who are photographers on the sidelines. It's just a dangerous situation. I just thank God, as far as I know, that nobody got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to, somebody today, I talked to one Tennessee player today who got hit with a beer, and that's a Tennessee player, So, again, Josh Heupel said it right last night in saying that this was a small portion of the fan base. And you're right, and that's good advice that your dad, gave. It doesn't take a whole lot to screw it up for everybody. The smallest amount can ruin a really special moment. And that thing just kind of deteriorated really quick last night, when they came back and had the call, stanzas called on the Jacob Warren, pass play. Sure looked like he got across. For whatever reason, though, they weren't able to overturn it.
I thought the initial spot was off. Where they spotted it on the field, and then, of course, they come back and replay. When I watched that, I thought the spot was not even close to where he got the ball. Now, it was hard to see when they did the angles. The ball was in it. Maybe it's in his other hand. I don't know if it's.
Well, and Brent Hubb said this last night, and it brings up a valid point. And it's something we're going to have Commissioner Greg Sankey coming up at 6:15. With all the money, the hundreds of millions of dollars that go into the television contract, how can you not have more camera angles? You do an NFL game, they've got camera angles from every which direction.
Do we know, though, in the home office what angles they're looking at? Are they looking at everyone we're looking at? Do they have more that we don't have? I don't know.
No, they're looking at everything that the TV truck has. Otherwise, you would be able to see different angles. There's no special secret angle.
Right.
SEC Network has less camera than, let's say, CBS.
Right. Or ESPN.
So should they not all have them the same amount? You know what I'm saying? If CBS has got 10, SEC Network has 10 or whatever. I'm just throwing out numbers.
When I watched it, and I know you have, we've all watched it a bunch of times, it's just hard to see from the angles, and again, that I've seen where the ball was. I thought he was, if he didn't get it, he was much, much closer to being at the line to gain than where they spotted the football.
See, I thought they would move the ball and then remeasure, and if he was short, he was short. You know what I'm saying? It felt like that's what, at bare minimum, that's what should have taken place, was a better spot.
So Tennessee losing a tough, tough game, a game that, let's be honest, when they lost to Pittsburgh AP back in September and the way Ole Miss started the season, I really didn't think this was a game that, certainly, if you had told me that Tyon Evans was out and the Mays brothers were out and all the injuries that Tennessee had, that they would really have much of a chance to win this football game. And yet they were right there with every chance to win. And now with injuries, And then Hooker's hurt. Looked like a really tough, bad injury for him. I don't know what his status is the rest of the year.
No, I mean, if you're a Tennessee fan, you hope that whatever he, you know, that whatever's going to sideline him, you know, it's not season-ending, and he could potentially be back in a few weeks. I mean, Tennessee obviously plays Alabama this week down in Tuscaloosa. Then they get a bye week. So, like, Tyon Evans, Cooper Mays, Cade Mays. To me, like, if you're a Tennessee, you're wanting to have them back for Kentucky. You know, you want to get those guys, rehab, continue to rehab and rehab some more, and have them back, you know, when Tennessee travels to Lexington the first week of November.
We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Mortgage Investors Group, for helping bring you the nation each and every week. MIG is making the American dream possible. You know, Mortgage Investors Group is excited to help home buyers affordably achieve the dream of home ownership by giving you the home court advantage. This great advantage will allow you to get into that dream home with less money out of your pocket. Home buyers will be provided with an exclusive 15-year fixed-rate second mortgage of $7,500, which will help cover your down payment, your closing costs, your prepaids, and in some cases, a portion of the insurance costs. This is not just for first-time home buyers, but move-up buyers may also be eligible. Call MIG today to learn more about the Home Court Advantage program. Mortgage Investors Group, they're committed to helping Tennesseans fulfill their dreams of home ownership.
The one thing that I will say about that game was, and I said this after the game, I really feel like Tennessee has found a really good defensive coordinator. I've said that for the last several weeks, but I mean, you think about, he doesn't have a whole lot of bullets in the gun, and I mean, Tim Banks, what he's getting out of that defense, you know, is really, really good, Chris. I mean, they give up 31, 7 of that was on an 11-yard short field after the muff punt to an Ole Miss offense that, even if they were down a couple of guys, has scored on anybody at will all year long, yeah, you know, minus Alabama. So when they scored 21, so I just continue to be impressed by Tim Banks. And he, to me, was the great X factor coming into the season, because you didn't know, you know, what he was going to bring. He wasn't the play caller at Penn State. And then, you know, at Illinois, he didn't have a whole lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think the body of work over the course of the season, they've certainly played better than you would have thought they would have based on their personnel. Disappointing that they were not able to stop the quarterback run, the quarterback draw. Now, part of that is Matt Corral is a great football player.
Well, and their offense is so good. Just pick your poison.
What a great competitor he is. But over and over again, when Ole Miss needed it, they needed a play, they needed a third down play, that's sort of what they went to. And in talking to Coach Kiffin after the game, he says, listen, that just, they kept leaving that open, and we kept calling it. And it was just like Tennessee never really adjusted to it. And Tennessee really only beat him over the top. Excuse me, Ole Miss really only beat Tennessee over the top on the one long touchdown pass.
That was a great throw.
Yeah, nice pump and throw. But other than that, I agree. I think Banks and his entire staff, Rodney Garner, all those guys, Willie Martinez, have done a really, really good job of getting everything and then some out of their personnel. And I think, you know, creating depth and playing young guys has been important, which is why AP, now that, you know, and we can look ahead, winning two more somewhere along the way, which I think Tennessee's got a great chance to do, and getting to bowl practice on campus and at the site, which is almost like an extra spring practice. Because remember, a lot of guys on this team, they're on this team now, well, there was no spring last year because of COVID. So no bowl practice. So to get those days here on campus and then at the bowl site, given what they've gone through for the last year and a half, is especially important. I tell you what, let's go ahead and take an early break here on the Nation with the Texas Roadhouse, the East location. We're going to take an early break, try to catch up with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. A lot to talk about. And on the other side of the break, you're listening to the Nation. All right, welcome back to segment number two here on the Nation. Let's go straight to the phone lines, AP, and welcome in special guest, the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Greg, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I hope you gentlemen are well.
Great. Listen, they say timing's everything, Greg, and a little bit to talk about here in the SEC. I want to ask you about last night. As you're watching the end of that Tennessee-Ole Miss game unfold, watching the stoppage, the delay, the things being thrown from the stands, what was going through your mind as you watched that?
Well, there's a level of disappointment, and probably morphs into anger in the moment because it was such a great atmosphere and intense competitive game back and forth. The game was still in doubt. And then to have the actions of a few overshadow the excitement of many and the competition of our coaches and our young people kind of ends in sadness. And then in the moment, I have a responsibility to find out what's going on. We wanted to finish the game, so I was on the phone with a number of people trying to accomplish just that, which I'm grateful we were able to get back to play. But the game like that, the game should never be interrupted in that manner.
Was there ever any discussion, Greg, that the game would be stopped with 54 seconds? Or were you guys always looking for a way to finish it no matter what?
No, it was on my mind. I'll say that. I was clear in a couple messages that, I was of the mindset that we could stop if order couldn't be restored. I wanted to be patient. Our officials are charged on the field initially with managing potential disruption. Give them credit for how they managed and communicated. Appreciate the patience of the people involved in a difficult circumstance and the work to allow play to resume. But again, under no circumstances should that ever take place.
Would it make more sense, Commissioner Sankey, how do you stop that from happening again? And if it happened again, would the prudent play be to exit, evacuate the stadium and let the kids just play in front of no one to finish the game? Because obviously Tennessee's players did nothing that would warrant the game ending with 54 seconds to go to give the student athlete a chance to finish out the game.
Well, that was the work that was done last night in that situation. We've set expectations for game management responsibility. Those rest with the home institution. Appreciate the conversations I've had today to address the issues. And we'll use this with our other 13-member institutions to remind them of the expectations that we have. You start with, when things are thrown on the floor, we have a commissioner's regulations that says those individuals who are involved in those violations need to be clearly identified and ejected when it's happened in the past. We have dealt with this on an individual type basis with the expectation those people not be permitted back in athletic events for the remainder of the season or year. I'm a fan of the longer withholding. When we modified our alcohol policy, we also introduced the reality of financial penalties and potential discontinuation of alcohol availability because it's viewed as a privilege. It's obviously new. I'm not to that point right now. We'll make game management announcements tomorrow like we do every week, but people need to know we as a league take these matters seriously.
Okay, so back to the on-the-field game. What can be done for the stoppages for all these injuries? I mean, again, some of the kids last night, and I felt bad for the ones that actually did get hurt, but then there were several times where kids just went down because they're trying to slow pace of play and so on and so forth. How can college football be better in that regard? What steps would you like to see be done, because that's happening more and more across the landscape?
It is, and it's a national issue. It's not an issue that's local to any one team or any one conference. And that's why last year when it was time for the Football Rules Committee to conduct its annual survey, I was pretty specific that a player who's injured to the point where they cannot exit the field under their own power should automatically be withheld for a period of time. And there were ideas of the next three plays, the whole series, the rest of the period. I think that merits additional consideration. The Rules Committee of the NCAA is charged with making these decisions. They have reasons for not advancing that philosophy yet. As we've got more pressure around hurry-up type offenses, and the pace of those offenses is even faster than what we may have seen 5 or 10 years ago in hurry-up offenses, that tactic is manifesting itself. And there, you know what? On the other hand, there were people being booed last night who were injured, really injured. And we have to filter out the gamesmanship from reality. People have to have patience because the official's job is to honor the injury. They're not there to diagnose. They're there to stop the game, and we're going to tend towards player safety. But can the rules be adjusted that accompanying the inability of a participant to exit the field on their own power would be a period of withholding to make sure they're okay?
We're visiting with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Maybe we go to the NBA flop roll, Greg. I remember when they put that in a few years ago. Back to football. SEC, everybody knows, is going to grow by two teams here in a few years, Oklahoma and Texas joining the league. As you guys examine, once they come aboard, the scheduling and trying to make the league more representative, where teams don't go 10 years, let's say, without playing, how do you go about doing that? Is that a priority to you to sort of see that, whether it's Texas A&M and South Carolina or Tennessee and Ole Miss, these schools that don't play much over the course of, say, a decade, play more regularly during, say, a kid's time 4 or 5 years on campus?
Your opening statement about timing is everything is never more true than in the question of expansion, since that was what the middle of media days when the
right.
Houston Chronicle story broke. So I have lived with timing's everything. And, you know, we scheduled this, 2 weeks ago, and I always want to honor those commitments, even though there are difficult issues to talk about. And on this one, we're almost 3 months from our media days. I think this week would be 3 months since that news story leaked. What I asked up front and what we've been working on is first of all, for our membership, just take a step back from kind of the way we've done things for the last almost 30 years since we went to divisions and 12 teams and look at every option. Blue sky thinking is how I labeled that expectation. Let's look at every option. And then the second principle is, how do we rotate teams through campuses more frequently? And then thirdly, we want to honor some of the great traditions in this conference. And that's a challenge. And I think we're up to it. But what we've not done is take a lot of options off the table yet. We continue to look at whether it's divisions as we have now. You've heard like the label pods or quads. We need to figure out a more creative label for that description, where you might move groups of four around into different divisions from year to year to accelerate teams playing each other. Or maybe even the single division idea, just one league standing where everybody rotates through more frequently. Well, we've heard from our athletics directors, and we just provided a pretty lengthy report and a survey analysis and even more discussion was more of a tendency to want to rotate the entire conference through every campus on a more frequent basis, which will alter our approach. And I think it's a really healthy conversation. What people miss is this was about to happen anyway. So even without expansion, we'd be in a football scheduling conversation as we come towards the end of our 12-year post-14 team expansion football scheduling cycle.
Greg, I guess it's next month that we have the playoff committee meetings. Do you have a feel for what the expectation or what the recommendation might be to the school presidents about expansion of the playoff? How many teams? Would there be expansion, et cetera?
The 12-team format, obviously I was involved in that. A lot of work, a lot of analysis. You know, I think everybody's heard 60-plus models. My view is if we're going to expand, that's still the optimal model. And that's because you're going to have conferences like our own and some others who want to make sure we have the best teams from a competitive standpoint. We have other conferences who want to make sure there's conference champion representation. And to do that at a number less than 12 and have any meaningful assurance of conference champions just doesn't work very effectively. You know, the notion of an 18 playoff where you're allocating 5 or 6 of those spots to conference champions, when you look over time, you'd be replacing potentially the 7th or 6th ranked team in the country with the 20th ranked team in the country or the 16th ranked team in the country. And that just doesn't work from a credibility standpoint. And we have to acknowledge that reality. So my view is the 12-team model, if we're going to expand, is the optimal model. I've said repeatedly, even at the beginning of the format discussions, we as a league are fine with the four best teams forming the college football playoff. And in fact, post-expansion, I still feel that way. If there were those who wanted to discuss the eight best teams, I think we'd have that conversation, but we'd really have to understand the value proposition there, and it's not present in the short term, and I'm not convinced it is there in the long term either.
Commissioner Sankey, you look at the league, you know, obviously every league has officiating problems from time to time. How do you all go about, divvying up, assignments week to week? It seemed like last night's crew was the same one that had the Mississippi State-Memphis botch at the end of that game. How do you go about trying to make sure that your best officials are in the biggest games? Or is it just a simple luck of the draw, or how do you go about it?
No, you have to take a step back and look at the big picture of officiating. So I guess the big picture now is I was looking at social media for NFL games, and everybody's mad at the NFL officials right now for one reason or another. I was with some NFL team personnel a few weeks ago, and they looked me straight in the eye and said they'd trade our officials for theirs any day of the week. And they meant that as a sign of respect for our officials. And there's going to be disagreement. They're human, and we do hold officials accountable. But we also have a limited pool of officials. And so they're going to rotate through campuses. They're going to rotate through teams. And they all have qualified as officials, and we do hold officials accountable. Just because people complain or perceive a call to be incorrect doesn't mean the social media statements about errors are in fact correct. There are going to be close calls that people dispute and see different ways. The situation in the Mississippi State Memphis game, we were clear about. We had an official that made an errant signal to stop a play. I think we've managed that appropriately, because one official does something doesn't penalize the entire crew, because the remainder of that particular play was consistent with the rules, as difficult as it is to understand. But officiating is a tough task, and we have to understand that. And we try diligently to get it right. And when we're not, we hate that. I know the officials hate it more than anyone else. And just because people perceive error doesn't mean actual error is present in a game.
Chris asked you about the expansion stuff a minute ago. Because Texas and Oklahoma will join the conference, whether it be next year or a couple of years from now, do you find yourself kind of watching what they do on a weekly basis at this point? Do you already kind of – you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, you haven't given me any smile questions, and you did right there, actually. So, yeah, I have paid a different level of attention. So last week was the Red River Shootout in Dallas, and I had a number of TVs. We had three of our own games happening, so I couldn't devote full attention, but I did pay attention. And last night I flipped over a couple of times to TCU Oklahoma just real quick to see what was happening. You know, we're focused on the July 1st, 2025 entry date. Texas and Oklahoma have a relationship with the Big 12 Conference that includes agreements that put us at that date. And so as we look at football scheduling, we have subgroups looking at all of our sports scheduling right now. That is very much our focus. You know, could things change? I'm not counting on that. We'll adapt as we need to. But I continue to elevate my attention around what happens in those programs.
Well, Greg, my friend, we appreciate you spending some time with us. Appreciate your candor, and it's always great to talk. Some stuff on the field, some stuff off the field, but hey, what's the old saying? That's why it means more.
No, it does, and we don't want it to go over the boiling point. And as I said, we're disappointed what happened last night. I give credit to the Tennessee fans within that stadium, 100,000 people. What, 99.9% of the people were well-behaved. They were passionate. That's the kind of expectation we have for everyone, and so we have to adjust. There's accountability to be applied, and we never want to see that again, and we look forward to the next opportunity to show the great passion in the positive way around SEC football and Tennessee football.
Well, as you try to figure out who are all throwing things, if you find the guy that throw the golf ball, I'm going to scramble next month. Each guy gets a throw. I'd like to get him on my team with that kind of precision.
Yeah, but I don't think you want to play with a yellow golf ball.
No.
It'll cost you more in the side conversations, if you know what I mean.
Greg, man, thanks again. We appreciate it. Look forward to catching up with you down the road this year at some SEC venue.
Okay. Take care, everyone.
Okay. Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, spending some time with us tonight. Let's take our second break here at the Texas Roadhouse, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. All right, back here on the Nation at the Texas Roadhouse, Chris Lowe and Austin Price. Our thanks to Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, joining us in the last segment. A lot to talk about. AP, you look around the SEC right now, and you know, Alabama, Georgia, I think, continue to stand out. A lot of teams, though, right there in the middle tier that have sort of beaten up on each other. I think even more so than we've seen recently with some of the games. A&M beating Alabama a week ago, Vanderbilt taking South Carolina to the wire. Auburn with a big win yesterday over Arkansas. LSU, news today coming down that Ed Orgeron is out as LSU's coach at the end of this season. But yeah. LSU with its biggest win of the season yesterday, scoring 49 points against Florida. Really been a sort of a weird last few weeks in the SEC.
Well, in Florida, what, 2-6 in their last 8 Power 5 games? The only wins were Vanderbilt and Tennessee.
And let's welcome Coach Nick Saban to the phone lines. Coach Saban, we appreciate you joining us tonight on the Nation. I want to ask you right off the bat. I know tough loss last week to A&M. You come back this week against Mississippi State. Where did you think you guys, Nick, improved the most and played better football this week?
Well, I think the biggest thing we did probably is just competed well in the game. Played 60 minutes, stayed focused. You know, it's the first complete game that I think we played all year. Guys played with good energy and intensity and maintained it throughout the game.
You know, you've been a part of a lot of rivalries, Nick. You go back to Michigan, Michigan State, LSU, Bama, now Alabama, Tennessee. What about this rivalry? And I know you know your history, you know your tradition of college football rivalries. What about this one sticks out in your mind?
Well, I think it just means a lot to a lot of people. I know their fans, our fans. I think it goes way back to Coach Bryan and the rival that he had with, you know, General Nayland, and, you know, two adjoining states. So it means a lot to a lot of people, especially, you know, our fans that have been fans for a long, long time. So very important game.
Coach, it's Austin. I don't know how much film you've watched at this point, but if you've been able to watch any, what's impressed you about Tennessee's defense? We've been talking about that on the show with, you know, they don't have a lot of bullets in the gun, but what, you know, Coach Banks has been able to do in year one, you know, getting the, you know, really solid play out of his group. What's impressed you about them?
Well, I haven't watched them yet, so I always watch it. The other stuff first, I've been impressed by their offense. They do a great job of running the ball and very well coached. I haven't watched the defense yet.
Nick, when you look at, you know, we talked about this a lot over the years. It seems like everybody's going fast now. They're playing up-tempo. Heck, you guys are. When you practice against that more, and of course you have to if you're going to be good against it, how much does that help when you face these guys each and every week?
Well, I think it helps a lot, especially when your offense can go fast, because it's really hard to duplicate speed against a scout team, pace of play, because those guys have to look at a card to give you the look of just playing the play. When you go fast against your own offense, I think that really helps you prepare for the game.
Nick, how much has it impacted the way you recruit, the way the game is played now? It's probably more offensive-centric than it's ever been, but what type of impact has that been on the way you guys have gone out and recruited?
Well, I think you just got to, you know, recruit more speed, more guys that can play in space. I think your upfront people, even though they got to be physical at the point of attack, they also have to be athletic and be able to get, you know, a lot of very athletic quarterbacks on the ground, especially with some of the quarterback runs that the people are running now. So I just think overall you have to be athletic and got to have a lot of guys that can play in space.
Coach, it's Austin again. When you look at how you recruit the quarterback position specifically, how much has that changed in the last, not even 10 years, but even the last 5, because the way the offenses are run now, football almost feels like if you're not good at quarterback, it's just hard to be good overall. How much do you feel like that's changed in the last 4 to 5 years?
Well, I think it's always been important to have a good quarterback, regardless of what kind of offense you run. But I think more different style of players can be very successful at playing a quarterback position now because of, you know, the spread and, you know, things like that. We really haven't changed the kind of quarterbacks that we'd like to recruit here because even though we do RPOs, we're not really into running quarterback runs that much with our quarterbacks. And we still have an NFL-style, you know, passing attack. So it's great to have athletic guys, and Bryce is very athletic, but we're looking for guys that can pass it first and, you know, sort of execute what we do.
Nick, speaking of Bryce, first-year starter, where has he grown the most from his first start earlier this year to where he is right now?
Well, you know, we were pleased with the way he started the season. He played really well against Miami. But I think the more experience he gets, the more comfortable he gets. See a lot of different looks in this league, a lot of different defenses, a lot of different third down pressures. And so I think those are the things that his experience is probably, you know, helping him in those situations know exactly what to do with the ball. And, you know, we made a couple big plays this past week throwing the ball hot, which is probably something that we wouldn't have done earlier in the year. And so we're really pleased with the way he's progressed.
You know, Nick, having covered this league for a long time, it's always been tough. It's always been balanced. A lot of teams can beat on each other. This year, to me, though, has that feel, maybe more so than the last few, that there's a ton of teams right there in the middle on any night, depending on how smart you are, how much you do or don't turn the football over, that can beat each other. Has it had that same type of feel halfway through the season to you?
No, I don't think there's any question about it. I think, you know, from top to bottom, the league's probably better than it's ever been. There's probably a couple things that contribute to that. You know, some of the teams got a lot of players come back for a COVID year, so that added some experience and, you know, older players with on their squad. And then, you know, because we have, you know, a great league, there was a lot of good transfers that transferred in the league. So they enhanced the quality of play from top to bottom as well.
You know, you mentioned transfers. Where do you see the whole issue with the portal going? Will it sort of stay where it is, Nick? I know none of us have a crystal ball, but players are going to continue to move. I think that's sort of a fact right now. But where do you sort of see that? How do you see that evolving going forward?
I don't know that anybody, you know, I think everybody kind of knows my opinion of it. I think the portal is good. It lets everybody know if a player wants to leave a program. But the part that I think is the big question is, should guys be immediately eligible?
Right.
Because I think, you know, that creates a lot of movement, hard to manage rosters. And in some ways, you know, I don't know how good that is for the players in terms of their development, doing the right things personally, academically, and athletically. And how it'll affect graduation rates and all those things in the future. I think, you know, that's where we probably ought to do a little study.
Yep, I would agree. Well, Nick, man, we appreciate you spending some time with us tonight on The Nation, and we look forward to catching up with you down the road.
All right, buddy. Well, we appreciate it. Y'all have a good night. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's Alabama head football coach Nick Saban joining us tonight on The Nation. We're going to take our final break here at the Texas Roadhouse and be right back. Welcome back into the show. Big show tonight, AP. Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, Alabama head football coach Nick Saban joining us on The Nation. I want to remind fans of the University of Tennessee and the Vol Network are proud to introduce this year's official Tennessee football fan T-shirt featuring Neyland 100. The shirt is on sale right now at Vol Shops on campus, Alumni Hall, Hound Dogs, along with Dick's Sporting Goods and Food City locations throughout the state. Be sure and pick up a shirt and register to win a pair of 2021 Tennessee football season tickets. Compliments of First Horizon. Celebrate 100 years in Neyland Stadium with this year's official football fan T-shirt. All right, let's go straight in, AP, to unquestionably your favorite part of the show, the Marathon Question of the Week. With a full tank of freedom, you can find your own highway and discover the true spirit of the American Road Marathon, fueling the American spirit. You've been saying Oklahoma was a paper tiger all year, and they just sort of continue to skate by right now. And I'm not saying who do you think.
I tell you what, they're less of a paper tiger now that they've made a quarterback change.
And give Lincoln Riley credit. You know, I mean, it's. What? I mean, he's.
This move, mid game against Texas, and then now it seems like that's going to be the way going forward. Doesn't it feel like when Clemson went and made the move to Trevor Lawrence?
Kelly Bryant to Trevor Lawrence. Saban.
Does it feel that way to you? Does to me.
Saban did it at halftime of the national championship game. You know, so when you recruit at a high, high level, like Oklahoma and Alabama and Clemson, it's easier to stockpile quarterbacks than it is at Tennessee or the teams that are sort of trying to climb that mountain.
You're more shocked that Eric Gray is not a factor at all at Oklahoma?
No.
I thought a lot of people had high hopes for him.
I thought he would be because his ability to catch the football and do different things. I thought they'd be able to, in that offense. So I mentioned Oklahoma sort of as a precursor to ask you our marathon question of the week. They're continuing to win, and maybe things are looking up for them at the quarterback position. But so right now, and I'm not asking you who you think will be the four teams as this plays out. But who do you think are the four best teams in college football right now?
I think it's Georgia clearly number one at this moment. Alabama would be my number two. I know they lost to Texas A&M, but I still think they're the second best team in college football. And then after that, I really think it gets muddied because I think a team like Oregon, if they got in the playoff, could potentially, you know, be a tough out, so to speak. I think Oklahoma with Caleb Williams at quarterback is much more dynamic and different than when they had with Spencer Rattler. Ohio State, to me, still you just don't know. Michigan's undefeated, but again, until they beat Ohio State, you know, if they go beat Ohio State, then all of a sudden they rock it up because I just think that's something that's mentally a big hurdle. I don't think the ACC has anybody.
No, the Michigan's big games are still to come, and we'll find out a lot more about them. See, I still think Ohio State's going to figure out a way to get in the playoff.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
I just, you know, they
still got to play Penn State, and they still got to play Michigan.
Now, the way that doesn't happen, if Oregon wins out and wins the Pac-12, then I don't see any way that Ohio State would get in over Oregon with Oregon going to Columbus and winning.
Yeah, sure.
That would be the scenario that would keep Ohio State. But I agree with you. I still think the two best teams in college football, and I know Cincinnati fans are listening or Oklahoma fans are listening, bring it on. But I still think Bama and Georgia are the two best teams. Cincinnati is intriguing to me, and I understand they don't play in a Power 5 league, but they're a really good football team.
They
wins impressively, and they've got a couple pretty nice wins.
Sure.
And they win big. If ever a group of five team is going to get in a 14 playoff format, it's probably the Bearcats this year. Luke Fickell is a really good coach. I love the culture, the mentality of that program.
If
tough, blue collar.
How methodical do you think Luke Fickell will be in deciding when he jumps to a new job?
Well, think about this. Think of the domino effect that's getting ready to occur. Okay, LSU's open. USC's open. So those are two of the top, what would you say, six jobs in college football?
Yeah, thereabouts.
All right, so whoever takes those two jobs, let's just say hypothetically, Jimbo Fisher goes to LSU and James Franklin goes to USC. Well, then all of a sudden you got Texas A&M open, you got Penn State open. I would think, again, this is all hypothetical. I would think then Penn State probably looks hard at Fickell. You know, and that to me is the kind of job. Penn State is a really good job. He's sort of a Midwest guy anyway. You know, whatever, you know, Midwest region type guy. But I don't know how the domino effect is going to play out. But I think he's got a good enough job, and he's got that program at a point, to your point, that he can be selective. I don't think he goes just to get a Power 5 job. It's got to be an upper-tier Power 5 job. And I don't know how it's all, as I said, I don't know how it, and there'll be other jobs. Is Fuente going to make it at Virginia Tech? You know, that's going to be...
That could be a good spot for Chadwell.
And I was going to say Jamie Chadwell. That's got Jamie Chadwell's name written all over it if Virginia Tech comes open. But see, again, and I'm sure there's going to be other jobs that you know, Cristobal's name, I think, probably will be out there for the LSU job. The three, and I talked to some people before we came on the show tonight that should know, the three or four names I think will be most prominent in the LSU search, Jimbo Fisher, Lane Kiffin, James Franklin, and don't rule out Mel Tucker at Michigan State, who's done a terrific job there.
Okay, let's say that happens. Mel Tucker goes to LSU.
Well,
is Michigan State the kind of, like, I get Penn State, but is Michigan State that kind of job for Luke Fickell?
He may wait. He may be able to wait, you know, and he's obviously he's recruiting well. And, you know, I don't know. That would be one that I think you got to sit down and decide whether, because your number, you know, I don't care what Michigan does or doesn't do. You're always number two in that state if you're Michigan State. And now Michigan State's beaten them a lot over the years.
Sure.
But you're still, you know, in the state of Michigan, it's always going to be the Wolverines and Sparty, and that's just the way it is, even when you beat them on the field. I mean, D'Antonio was there, and they owned Michigan most of the time he was there. And I just think that's a stigma that some coaches may look at that as a challenge, but that's a stigma that a lot of coaches don't look at. So we got about 2 minutes left. Most disappointing team in college football. And I'll admit, I didn't see it coming. With Clemson offensively, and Coach Spurrier was on with us. What was it, 3 weeks ago, Coach Spurrier was on with us, and he called it. He said they offensively just look like they don't have any kind of plan. And it's amazing when you lose a great quarterback like Trevor Lawrence, you lose a great running back like Etienne, and I don't think they're very good in the offensive line either.
I told you that yesterday in the press box. If Clemson's going to flip the script, they either have to change their offensive line recruiting, or they've got to make a change in offensive line coach. Like, they've not recruited that position very well at all, and that's where they've not been as good. Etienne made up for his ability to take nothing and turning into something. He masked over a lot of that, in my opinion. Much like, you know, Josh Dobbs masked over things that were you know, shortcomings for Tennessee's offense when he was here.
Well, and you know, it's the thing about Etienne is he just could do everything. He could catch the ball out of the backfield. He could get the short. He was a tough runner down in a short yard situation. He was one of those guys, again, you sometimes you take running backs for granted, AP, but he's just the kind of kid that you don't. All right, we're about 30 seconds away. Just saw the line on the Alabama-Tennessee game.
26.5.
27 points. The Tide start out against Alabama, against Tennessee, a 27-point favorite. We'll see who's healthy for Tennessee. Let's hope it works out for Hooker, but, boy, that looked like an ugly entry.
It did.
For Austin Price, I'm Chris Lowe. We'll see you next Sunday right here on The Nation.